Support for New Retina Radio comes from Sandoz, manufacturer of Cimerli, ranibizumab EQRN. Discover its distinct value at Cimerli.com. That's Cimerli.com.
Hello, my name is John Kitchens, and I am in practice at Retina Associates of Kentucky in Lexington, Kentucky. Welcome to this episode of The State of Biosimilars. I have two guests with me today. First and foremost, my good friend Dave Brown from Retina Consultants of Texas in Houston, Texas. Hello, Dave.
Hey, John.
And it's rare that Dave's overshadowed, but I have to say, Dave, I think today you might be overshadowed by somebody I really want to hear from. Kristen Yocas, who is the Vice President of Process Integrations at Retina Consultants of America. Hello, Kristen.
Hi, Dr. Kitchens. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So let's jump into our discussion about biosimilars. First of all, just a couple of top line facts. Currently, we have two biosimilars approved by the FDA, both of which have a reference molecule being ranibizumab. And per the AAO, Cimerli is cleared for all indications of ranibizumab, as it comes in both the 0.3 and 0.5 milligram formulations. BioViz has approval for all indications of ranibizumab at 0.5 milligrams. So Dave, we'll start with you. Retina Consultants of Texas has done a great job of integrating biosimilars into the practice. How did you achieve that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a, you know, I think the biosimilars, we've been waiting for it for a long time. We were part of the Samsung trial that is the BioViz. You know, certainly have seen the presentations, have thought that they would come to practice before, and there were some intellectual property issues. You know, by the time they actually came out, I think we already had used it in trials, knew it was coming, and we had payers telling us, we really want you to do this because it's going to make things cheaper. Whether it has or not, I don't know, but we were totally fine. We wish there was a prefill syringe, and I think that's really been the only headwind, the biggest headwind to adoption.
And, you know, as somebody who was involved in the clinical trials, and we talked to Carl O actually about this on a previous podcast, the first episode in this series, what is it that you have purview to that gives you confidence, Dave, that a biosimilar is going to behave the same way as the reference product?
You know, if you look at the nuts and bolts of how a biosimilar is approved, it's really much, I think it gets confused with generic drugs. And it's actually way more similar to the reference product than a generic is. When I go to get my antihypertension drug from Walgreens, sometimes it's a little round pill, sometimes it's a football-shaped blue pill. Like, it really varies. I mean, interestingly, if you look at the reference product ranibizumab, it's a cell line, and it turns out that fluctuates over time. And even the reference product ranibizumab or aflibercept is not exactly the same today as it was 10 years ago. And I don't think many people appreciate that. What the biosimilars show is that with the current version of ranibizumab, it is not different from a PK standpoint, from a pharmaceutical standpoint, and it has to prove it in at least one disease that the vision curves are the same. In other words, if you had a half-strength ranibizumab, you would expect that you would see more like we saw in Rise Ride or Anchor Marina, where the 0.3 didn't do as well as the 0.5. Here the agency looks at the vision curve in that first 3 months. That's not all they do. They look at the safety and the vision curve and make sure it ends up the same place at 12 months. And all those were shown pretty convincingly in robust trials for both agents that are out there, that these truly are the same as the ranibizumab we've been using since 2006 in the clinic.
You know, and you guys did a great job at Retina Consultants of Texas, kind of getting everybody on the same page. But for the larger entity that you belong to, Retina Consultants of America, or RCA, you had to integrate that across multiple practices. And we all know that getting retina specialists do the same things like herding cats Kristen, I would love to know, how good of a cat herder are you, and how hard was it to kind of get everybody kind of in step with that? And first, I guess, tell us your role with RCA.
Sure. So, and I would say that for me, it's herding fleas on cats. So even a little bit more challenging than cats, and certainly lean into the expertise of Dr. Brown. And we'll talk about how we leverage that. But really my role at RCA on the operational side is really to listen to the lead of the physicians. What do they need assistance with and what do they need support with? So when physicians express interest in something like biosimilars, how can we make that path easier for them at every turn? So that direction comes from the physicians. They've been in this space for a long time and they know what the hurdles are. And my job is really to work to remove those hurdles. So a lot of centralized resources that the practices can choose from or choose not to use. So everything from what does that look like on a payer authorization or an appeal or a continuation of care to how do we work with the physicians and leaders like Dr. Brown with distributor and manufacturers, our inventory management systems, our payer policy, patient support. And I would say it really starts with listening to the physicians, listening to Dr. Brown and his peers and in RCA talk about why it's important to them, how the drug works, the impact it can have on patients, so that we are very educated in strategizing how we roll that out and support them.
So I don't, John, I don't think, the way we run our group is doctors can give whatever they think is the best for the patient. And so we have had groups that haven't used as much biosimilar. You know, they're very comfortable with the reference product. There's so much move towards aflibercept. You know, a lot of them had moved away from ranibizumab to begin with. You know, I think that the big test, the big change in our field is when we have aflibercept biosense. And if we really have an aflibercept biosim that we think is equivalent, I think that could really change the world. I mean, what Kristen has done for us is to work with the administrators on, now they have the first 6 months, you don't have a J or a Q code. Now they have a Q code, and that's what biosimilars get. Administrators have to know what the hell is a Q code, because, right, we only used J codes before. You know, what is that going to look like on an appeal? Which payers are actually paying? Which payers, like Aetna has you first-line biosimilar. Others have you first-line Avastin and then a biosimilar, some one drug, some the other. And so Kristen's job is to really help our administrators give them the tools so that the nuts and bolts of the business part of it can happen while the patients get the drug.
For something like RCA that's a nationwide entity, how hard is that when you have different carriers in different regions to kind of keep all of that straight?
So I think that's where we do a lot of partnering with the manufacturers. But at the end of the day, I think if you look at high volume, specific payers, it's not as complex as one might think. It's what are the tools to access that information. And then I think with biosimilars, the real opportunity was to position for continuity of care with your patients. So if they were already being treated with a reference product, that their care should not be interrupted when they went to a biosimilar. So we spent a lot of time there, which also helps you navigate the payer policy, right? And avoid some of those things that Dr. Brown referenced.
You know, one thing we did that I think is important is when we all went to med school, we never used branded names. In other words, you didn't know that Corgard or Norvasc was Losartan or, and because we didn't have anything else, we've been using the brand name for 15 years, really doing their marketing for them. So we made a concerted effort to move our informed consent forms and charting to the generic term, which is probably what you know, the medical ethics people would tell you you should do in the first place, right? You're not buying this brand or this brand. You're using ranibizumab or aflibercept, and you do need to make sure that the aflibercept you're giving or the ranibizumab you're giving, you feel comfortable that it's all the same. And that's what we've done on a science standpoint. But I think that'll help practices and patients. When I see a patient, I said they got wet AMD, and I say, we're going to start you on ranibizumab that we've been using in the clinic for 15 years or 17 years or whatever it is now, right? And then I don't necessarily tell them which brand I'm going to give them, because it's really more of a medical decision which agent to use as opposed to which company's making it or which drug rep's giving you barbecue. And hopefully that's not the reason you make the decision.
That's great. Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll continue our discussion. So please stay tuned.
Support for New Retina Radio comes from Sandoz, manufacturer of Cimerli, ranibizumab EQRN. Discover its distinct value at Cimerli.com. That's Cimerli.com.
Welcome back to our discussion about the logistics of integrating biosimilars into a retina practice. I'd really like to hear more from our panelists about biosimilars in today's clinical landscapes, biosimilars in the near future. Dave, as we were closing out our first segment there, you mentioned evaluating the biosimilars. You know, it's easy now that we just have two biosimilars to ranibizumab, but I would imagine in the next 6 months or so, we're going to have a half a dozen or more aflibercept biosimilars. What should we be thinking about? What should we be evaluating as we consider which one of these to use? Or is it going to matter? Are we just going to be told which one to use by insurance?
Yeah, I've given up on guessing what insurance companies or crazy things they're going to ask me to do. That being said, you know, I think that you need to think about two main things, you know, in terms of which one to choose. One, does the company make a lot of biosimilars? Is that a major pharmaceutical manufacturer? Do you feel confident that it's the same level of fit and finish or what have you as Genentech or Novartis Roche or, you know, Regeneron, et cetera, right? In terms of, bigger companies like Coherus, like Biogen, like Amgen, like, you know, Sandoz, that have been in this space with oncology, I feel way more comfortable than a company that's perhaps from, you know, somewhere outside the U.S. that really does not have a lot of U.S. products. So you need to be comfortable with the company that's making it and the plant, and because you're the one putting this drug into the patient's eye. The trials, I like the trials being done in the United States. I feel much more comfortable than, you know, trials that were predominantly ex-US, because I know I have a lot of respect and know the rigor of the FDA system. The second thing is more of a Kristen thing in terms of, do they have an assistance program for copay? You know, do they have a strong, group that's working on payer relations with the big, you know, our Humanas, our Aetnas, our Uniteds, our Blue Crosses. So you need that for the patients, and you need the science. And then maybe you do have two or three. And hopefully you can pick one. One of them either gives you better support from a local rep or a better pricing or what have you, because it would be a nightmare to have 12 aflibercept biosimilars and trying to pick the right one out of the fridge for the right insurance. I think we're going to ideally try to settle on one or two once we get to aflibercept, because I don't think it's feasible to have all the SKUs that it would take to take all the biosimilars.
Yeah, Kristen, what are your thoughts on what we're looking at and how, as practices, we can be advocates to make sure we don't run into that scenario where we have to carry every biosimilar because a different insurance company wants us to use a different one in a tiered therapy paradigm?
Yeah, I would start by echoing Dr. Brown's thoughts that all things being clinically equal, I think it's going to come down to all of those wraparound services and not only how robust they are, but how streamlined they are. And a lot of that is going to lean into what kind of technology are they using, or are they offering, are they partnering with, and also are they lessening the burden? So one of the disruptors that we've seen with the biosimilars coming to the space is they are changing some of the rules of engagement around prior authorizations and benefit investigations and what that looks like with their manufacturer hubs. So they are partnering with practices where we don't have to depend on their hub. They will take our benefit investigation. That's a 50% reduction in workload. So I think there is disruption on the service side as well from the biosimilars. And I mean disruption in a positive way. So I'm interested in seeing how that evolves. And then I think from again, if the physicians tell me they're all things are clinically equal in their mind, I think it with someone delivering a biosimilar for both, right? So I'm not going one place for one biosimilar and another place for another biosimilar. Again, that narrows my inventory management. It narrows my ordering. It puts me in a better position with the payer. And as far as the payers, I think, you know, it's never too early to start talking about how they're going to manage this and what's going to drive their decision making.
And who do we engage with that, Kristen? How do you reach out to a payer in advance of something being available and start that discourse? What can a practice do that's not a part of RCA, a bigger entity, to start to have some influence over this?
So I think now is a great time because we're all talking to the payers at different levels with these entrants, right? Whether it's a local provider rep, whether we've engaged a medical director over an issue, whether we're recontracting, or whether we're just talking to a referral and authorization process a person. Also the manufacturers as well. So I think it's any opportunity, I guess, is my answer to that question. Any opportunity that presents itself to start a dialogue about what are they thinking, what are they acting? And I will say that we've had to do as I'm sure all the practices have had to do a lot of education to the people on the other end of the phone. So that staff doing a prior authorization or a step edit, not even understanding what it means to be a biosimilar.
So I think that, you know, the reason why biosimilars and why do you even care? Like, we got great reference drugs that work great. I think that all of us who think that the drugs are really, really expensive in our space, you know, and not that they're not worth it, but if you can treat somebody with a $1,000 drug instead of starting with a $2,300 drug with the ads on TV, now there's two of them, and it works just as fine, you save the healthcare dollar. And not only that, you save the employer who's paying for that healthcare insurance for their employee. So we have not seen it yet in ophthalmology, but, you know, in oncology and rheumatology, biosimilars basically lower the overall cost of drugs 30% on average for the whole, you know, the whole balance of drugs taken. And so most payers want you to use a biosimilar. They don't really know ophthalmology from Adam, but they know that you use expensive drugs. And once they hear there's a biosimilar, they go, yes, you should use some. The difficulty is making sure that the prior auths and the steps make sense. You know, Blue Cross is very unique in each market. Some are more national, like Aetna. Aetna's much more national policies. But anytime you have an opportunity to, if you're a small to mid-sized practice and you have an opportunity to talk with your payer, see what they want. Comes down to being comfortable with the science, working with the business people to make sure you're getting paid. But if we could have 15 aflibercepts and the price goes down to $400 or $500, and, you know, it's in, and people are saying use aflibercept instead of making you four-step therapy through Avastin, that'd be great for every patient.
That's absolutely right. And Dave, speaking of aflibercept, you're probably one of the few people that would be able to articulate this or know this. When are we going to have a biosimilar aflibercept, and what is the holdup?
So there are, and so the patents on the actual molecules have expired. And there are patents still pending appeals on the dosing. In other words, three doses in Q8 or monthly or what have you. And then the latest holdup has been a patent on the formulation. In other words, how you mix it up and the pH and that kind of stuff. And that was Regeneron defended that patent and won the patent, the first lawsuit, saying that they still have a patent on how you make the aflibercept. So that comes up for appeal sometime in the next 6 to 8 months. It is likely that some manufacturers think that is a foregone conclusion that that'll be overturned and they will put what's called launch at risk. But it's hard to say. Yeah, my prediction would be the earliest the patents will be decided is mid-2025. But there's quite, I think there's a possibility that several may launch first quarter of 2025, very end of 2024, thinking that their lawyers have told them they can win the case. Again, patent law is not what I went to school for. I'm a retina surgeon, so you might need a trained professional.
Well, I knew, Dave, that if anybody would be able to give a great answer to that, that you would, so I really appreciate it. Listen, that's a wrap for our discussion today. I want to thank Dave Brown and Kristen Jokas for joining me. This was the second and final installment of this miniseries. Go back in your new Retina Radio feed and find the first part of this discussion, which features Drs. Carl O. and Faraz Rahal. And subscribe to the podcast. Make sure you get new conversations as they come out. I'm John Kitchens. Thanks for listening.